John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, February 28, 2013. Israeli soldiers attack political detainees and settlers attack Palestinian school children in northern West Bank. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli settlers attacked on Thursday midday school children at the village of Burin near the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Local sources reported that armed settlers invaded the village and attacked the school children as they left school. The children responded by hurling stones at the Israeli settlers. Israeli soldiers later came and attacked the school children with the settlers. No injuries were reported. Earlier on Thursday, clashes erupted near the central West Bank city of Ramallah between Israeli soldiers and Palestinian protesters in solidarity with Palestinian political detainees held by Israel. Residents and university students marched towards the Ofer military detention center near Ramallah. As soon as they reached Ofer, Israeli troops fired tear gas and rubber-coated steel bullets at them. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. Moreover, Palestinian youths protested in solidarity with political prisoners at the Atara checkpoint near Ramallah as well. Soldiers also used tear gas. Many were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation. In other news, Israeli soldiers attacked on late Wednesday night and Thursday morning Palestinian political prisoners being held at the military detention center of Rimon. According to the Palestinian Political Detainees Affairs Ministry, two prisoners were injured by Israeli soldiers' rubber-coated steel bullets. Palestinian political prisoners held by Israel are on high alert as they are threatening to escalate their protest move if Israel does not release hunger-striking political detainees and stop its ill treatment to the prisoners. So far, there are 11 political detainees held by Israel on hunger strike. The longest time among them is Samer al-Isawi, who is on hunger strike for nearly 7 months now. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, February 28th, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by Hassam Kassis and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Province, Afghanistan, 28th of February. Insurgents launched a rocket attack on Camp Bastion, the main NATO base in Helmand Province. A spokesman for Task Force Helmand admitted the rockets caused damage, but claimed there were no casualties at the heavily fortified base. There may be as many as 4,000 U.S., British, and Estonian troops at Camp Bastion. Kabul, Afghanistan, 28th of February. A suicide bomber blew up a busload of soldiers, wounding 6 soldiers and 4 civilians. Andar Province, Afghanistan, 28th of February. Taliban agents poisoned 10 members of the Afghan local police and 7 of their civilian associates in their post, then shot them dead when they became unconscious. The Taliban took responsibility for this. Claims that Taliban attacks in Afghanistan had declined this year have been found to be nothing more than a clerical error. The war continues unabated. Mr. Barack Obama, now is the time to end this. You are doing no better in Afghanistan than Bush did in Iraq. Bring all the troops home today. Breaking news. Alleged WikiLeaks source Bradley Manning has pleaded not guilty to aiding the enemy, but guilty to 10 lesser charges in a military court. He also said the Washington Post and the New York Times refused his information, so he had to send it to WikiLeaks. Meanwhile, a CIA employee who blew the whistle on a Bush-era torture begins serving a 2.5-year prison sentence today, while the torturers he blew the whistle on walk free. Bradley Manning had to wait until today just to enter his plea. After being arrested in Iraq in 2010, held without charges for about a year, and tortured at Quantico Marine Barracks. On the 28th of February, two anarchist activists who have refused to testify in front of a Seattle grand jury staging a witch hunt and anarchist and Occupy protesters were ordered released from jail. They should be walking the streets in freedom as you hear this. Matt Duran and Kedio had filed motions to their attorney that having refused to testify for 5 months, even while being held in jail for refusing to do so, indicated that their imprisonment was no longer what is known as coercive, but had become punitive. Grand juries are only permitted to hold non-cooperators to coerce them to testify. If it doesn't work, they must be released. On the 28th of February, a federal judge agreed, and Matt Duran and Kedio have been ordered released after 5 months in jail with 2 held in solitary confinement. They issued statements saying they would never snitch no matter how long they were held, and a judge found their conduct sufficient evidence that this was true to declare their continuing incarceration punitive and thus illegal for this purpose. Maddie Pfeiffer is still in jail for also refusing to snitch. A similar motion from his attorneys can't be far behind. In all 3 cases, these heroic grand jury resistors have never once cracked, and that's the evidence that is setting them free. Until Maddie's petition is heard too, he still needs your support and your direct action. There was one more grand jury resistor who refused to appear at all, whom the pigs in the FBI can't find. Still more activists cannot be located even for the purpose of serving the grand jury subpoenas, something they cannot legally be arrested for even if they are ever found, as it violates no laws. Looks to me like the grand jury witch hunt in the Seattle area anarchists and Occupy protesters is about to run into a stone wall. This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTradio@hushmail.com.
Controversy erupted on the Yale University campus in late January when the Yale Herald newspaper reported that the Pentagon Special Operations Command had recently awarded Charles Morgan, a professor of psychiatry at Yale's medical school, a $1.8 million grant to teach interviewing methods to U.S. Army Green Berets using New Haven's local immigrant population as volunteer-paid test subjects. The objective of the Center for Excellence for Operational Neuroscience that Morgan hoped to direct is to improve the quality of military intelligence that will be applied by the Pentagon in the field and in combat zones around the world. Yale students, faculty, community, and immigrants' rights groups quickly mobilized opposition to the military research project, objecting to the militarization of the Yale campus and what they viewed as ethically suspect interrogation training that would target local immigrants. By February 22nd, a student online petition against the training center had garnered more than 650 signatures with planned protests. But as opposition surfaced, the Department of Defense retracted an earlier statement that confirmed it was providing Yale funds for the center, declaring that the Pentagon has not and will not provide Yale funds to establish Morgan's research project. Robert J. Alpern, dean of Yale Medical School, issued a press release stating, "We are not moving forward on any such center until we have fully investigated all these issues." Your reporter spoke with Chris Hebdon, a doctoral student in anthropology at Yale, who discusses the current status of the research center and why student, faculty, and community groups came together to challenge the ethics of military research on campus.
There were some of us who were interested in organizing discussions about drone bombings, and we were in touch with each other, and I got involved by talking with a student in the French department and an undergraduate at Yale College who wrote an op-ed in the Daily News and tried to connect with immigrant activists in New Haven to rally around this issue.
I'll just quote from a statement released by Yale School of Medicine Dean Robert Alpern that was published last week. "Members of the Yale and New Haven communities have raised concerns about a possible Center for Operational Neuroscience that was reported in the press. In light of the issues raised, we are not moving forward on any such center until we have fully investigated all these issues." Now, until we have fully investigated all these issues, sounds like this program may very well be still alive and well.
Yeah, there was a lot of ambiguity in what the university said and also what the military said. The short history of it is that when we wrote to the Pentagon, they confirmed that such a grant was initiated and so forth. And we talked to the university and they said that this research was under review and that it was going to be, you know, held according to all the strict standards of Yale's research protocols. But within 24 hours, we heard from the military that no grant had ever been given and that no grant would be given. And 24 hours later, we heard again from the military that this grant was denied in 2012, a year ago. And Yale, yes, has said that no such thing will proceed until a proper, you know, investigation of it or review has been done. But they certainly haven't been clear. I think what's really important, though, is that even if this program doesn't proceed at Yale, who's to say it's not going to take place at another university that is more broke or needs the money? So I think that's the reason to keep up discussion and get some open debate at Yale, also at other universities and with the wider New Haven community.
Chris, it's certainly true that there are many military-funded research projects on the Yale campus itself and across the country. What do you know about other military-funded experiments and research going on that may be below the radar and, you know, as objectionable as this one? Or is there some kind of policy on campus that would enable students, the faculty, and the New Haven community at large to gain some transparency into these programs to better know what's being done on the campus?
There's no formal procedures. So if a biologist submits something for National Science Foundation, once a proposal is approved, it becomes public. Same thing for NIH, for example, publicly funded research. DOD is also publicly funded, but it is not made available, even after it's approved. So under the radar is exactly the right statement. This is something that apparently we wouldn't have known about. I mean, this operational special ops center was slated to open in just a month or two, and we hadn't heard anything about it. And the issue of militarization in universities, but also issues of militarization in the United States, are general. It's not just at Yale. So you have CIA-funded centers for intelligence studies and national security studies. You see this at places like University of Maryland, University of Washington, lots of other schools. And these types of programs highlight the problems with the difference of priorities between academic and foreign policy goals. So national security studies is not an academic field. It's a military objective and a political objective. And so I think that this is why we need a debate with the community, in the media, with professors and students who really bring this stuff out in the open. Yale has a long history of involvement with the military and continues right through to today. You know, we have Stanley McChrystal teaching classes here for the last couple of years in the Jackson Institute of Global Affairs. And this was also very controversial and highlights the problems with academia and military involvement, which is that his students were not allowed to take their notes out of class and talk about them. So there's secrecy. And that's very antithetical to the liberal arts university, but to open inquiry in any university. And we're hoping to get more people around the United States, and especially in New Haven, talking about these things.
That was Chris Hebdon, a doctoral student in anthropology at Yale University. Find more information and discussion on military research in academia on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
We have never stood by to see a whale die.
Is one whale's life worth war?
Until you find something worth dying for, you haven't really lived.
The whale war between Sea Shepherd and the whale-killing poachers based in Japan continues to escalate. On the 27th of February, Sea Shepherd released footage of the Sea Shepherd ship Bob Barker being sandwiched between the huge whaling factory ship Nishan Maru and the refueling tanker Sun Laurel in a third unsuccessful attempt by the whalers to refuel. That intentional collision occurred on Monday, the 25th of February. You can clearly see the bright flash of a stun grenade exploding by the deck of the Sun Laurel. A grenade in a no-smoking area of an oil tanker goes far beyond reckless endangerment. In the video, it looks like the Sun Laurel is firing on the Bob Barker in a duel of old-style wooden pirate ships, but it is actually the Nishan Maru's grenade overshooting the Sea Shepherd ship and exploding over the tanker. The last week has seen three clashes at sea as the whalers have tried three times to refuel their ships after having caught only one whale before Sea Shepherd caught them and put a stop to it. It was a Japanese newspaper that reported the whalers were caught in the act of harpooning their first whale. Meanwhile, the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has had the nerve to compare Sea Shepherd to pirates for fighting a totally illegal foreign poaching fleet. U.S. courts have no jurisdiction over Sea Shepherd Australia in Australian waters, yet deemed to hear a case by another foreign country, Japan, even after Sea Shepherd USA severed their ties with the campaign to comply with an injunction from another U.S. court. Chief Judge Alex Kozinski went so far as to say, quote, "You don't need a peg leg or an eye patch. Pirates? So be it. Hell, this is pirate radio." In Wellington, New Zealand, Sea Shepherd New Zealand is staging a pirate-themed fundraiser, saying, quote, "The presence of you and your dirty, rum-gutted mates is required to join Barnaby Wife, the Manor Rays, Ryan Preble, and Redbird Jr. to raise a cup to the Sea Shepherd fleet, celebrating the 9th Antarctic Whale Defense Campaign, Operation Zero Tolerance. Prepare yourselves to be awarded with gifts of parley and such, with the pirateness of your apparel most paramount. With stormy seas ahead once more, The righteous pirates of the South are chasing scurvy dogs off with tricks old and new. Do what you can to support their defense of the world's dwindling whale population.
Leaders of Native nations in both Canada and Oklahoma from the U.S. were among the speakers at the Forward on Climate rally in Washington, D.C. on February 17th, which saw an estimated 35 to nearly 50,000 people come together to demand that President Obama deny a federal permit for construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. The pipeline would transport dirty tar sands from Alberta, Canada, to refineries on the Texas Gulf Coast, mostly for export. The southern leg of the pipeline, already under construction in Texas, has generated powerful local opposition through groups such as the Tar Sands Blockade. Tar sands have a much bigger carbon footprint than other fossil fuels. Groups like the Sierra Club and 350.org, main sponsors of the Washington protest rally, have been calling on Mr. Obama to live up to his post-election pledges to tackle climate change and nix this project. One of the Native leaders who spoke at the rally was Jackie Thomas, a chief of the Sea Coos First Nation in northern British Columbia. She is a co-leader of the Yinka Dene Alliance, a coalition of First Nations and others working to stop the proposed Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline from taking tar sands from Alberta through British Columbia to the Pacific Ocean for export. In this excerpt from her talk, she addresses the problems tar sands extraction has already caused and about the alliances that are growing in Canada and the U.S. to stop the tar sands pipeline projects.
I am a mother of four and a grandmother of one, and I was raised by my own grandmother. She was a traditional medicine woman of my people, and I learned early on the value of our environment. And what she told us was, when we take care of the land would take care of us. If we destroy this land, we will destroy ourselves. I'm speaking on behalf of the Yinka Dene Alliance. We formed an alliance to stop the Enbridge Northern Gateway Project, which plans to bring tar sands oil to the coast of British Columbia, which will then be put on tankers to go to the Asian markets. It puts at risk my neighbors to the east of me that live at the tar sands. The government doesn't recognize these people, and these people have been dying of mysterious cancers. Their water is polluted, their animals are sick, and Mother Earth is sick. Our alliance have used our own laws to protect our lands, and for centuries we've done this. We created the Save the Fraser Declaration. Currently we have over 135 First Nations in Canada signed up to this. We have built alliances and will be signing international documents with other nations of the Indigenous world in the future. The Canadian government has been calling me an environmental extremist, a radical, and an enemy of Canada. All I want and my people want to do is protect this land and this water that is sacred. This water that we're talking about has no color. This water that we're talking about is not just water for my own people. It is water also for my neighbor ranchers, my neighbor farmers that live next door to me. It's a human issue, and it impacts everyone. We are all connected. Enbridge really has brought our communities together in Canada, because we've had oil spills, and you've also had oil spills in this country, because oil will spill. It's just a matter of when. They've spilt in the Kalamazoo, they've spilt oil in Red Deer, Alberta, they've spilt oil in my sister, the territories of the Lwakan Cree, they've spilt oil in the Northwest Territories, the Dene brothers and sisters that I know from the Northwest Territories. And of course, who can forget Exxon Valdez? Never in my life have I ever seen white and Native worked together until now. In Canada, First Nations are always expected to be the sacrificial lambs for our government in terms of the economy. Like the economy is a human being. Like the economy is more important than our land and our water. Water is a non-renewable resource, and we can't take it for granted. Under the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, the Inkatenaeh Alliance have not given our free, prior, and informed consent to this project. In Canada, there's a judicial review process going on right now. While the process is still underway, our government has made public statements to the effect that this project will go through. Over the last year, my country has made changes to environmental laws that eases the burden for industry to discriminately go forward with these projects. We cannot keep taking out of greed. We should only take out of need. I'm here to ask you and to ask the world to help us. The Canadian government has made it clear they will approve Enbridge. We need your help to stand with us. We need your prayers. I need somebody to stand with me as the bulldozers come. I'm laying down my life.
That was Chief Jackie Thomas of the Sea Coos First Nation in Canada. This segment was recorded and produced by Between the Lines' Melinda Tuhus. Learn more about the issues related to tar sands extraction and the Keystone XL pipeline by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
Everything's red. All red, everything. Everything's red. All red, everything. Everything's red. Everything's red. 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 Dead. Red. Dead. Red. First off, I send love to Lupe for giving us hope in this Lakota Sioux. All red, everything, red nation rising. Yeah. Revising our story, they're televising. Child of the plains, I see 2020. Yeah. Poverty porn, TV pimpers for money. Nah. Tell Diane Sawyer, I am a warrior. Yeah. Give me your camera, send pal to your lawyer. Free all my people, get them out of prison. Yeah. Take them to Sundance, show them how we're living. Right. Give youth an outlet, disadvantaged prodigies. Feed these Republicans all our commodities. Put them on the reds. From the day they're born, they won't survive cause their cancer is airborne. Put them in our schools, put them in our shoes. Take away their money and give them our booze. Red, make everything red. Words of my ancestors up in my head. Food for thought, our kids underfed. Your oil is mud, they want the earth dead. Oil for blood, oil for blood. Making you rich, you soil my love. Oil for blood, my mother is clean. That oil is mud. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Everything's red, everything's red. Red, 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 dead. Red, dead. Red. I can't afford to leave the reds. Government has got me trapped. The leadership need a tip. And most of my tribal leaders whack. They don't wanna hear that. They just wanna chill. I'm sick, I'll go to IHS and get a pill. For real? Like a song without a title. Yeah. Feel forgotten, like slaves picking the cotton. Forever tribal, with no connection to the Bible. Lying, people rotting, sometimes I'm suicidal. Feeling like no exit, Generation X shit. Text mentioning sex, what I connect with. Yeah. Technology, get this world to acknowledge me. My ancestors studied numbers and astrology. Lakota philosophy, keep them haters off of me. Keystone XL, you smell like an atrocity. To my home and my ancestors, I'm loyal. Yeah. Build that pipeline and I'm burning down your oil. Oil for blood, oil for blood, making you rich, you soil my love. Oil for blood, my mother is clean, that oil is mud. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Everything's red, everything's red. Red, 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 dead. Red, dead. Red. We'll be right back.
your paws up, 'cause you were born this way, baby.
Into the Light was a 6,000-mile march across a continent for total equality for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and other gender-variant folks. It began in Seattle, with marchers dropping in and out all the way, and on the 23rd of February, it ended in D.C. in front of the White House.
Full equality now! Full equality now!
One theme of the march was utter outrage over the thousands of young folks who've been either murdered or bullied and driven to suicide over their sexuality.
From 2011 to 2012, what has been recorded for transgender deaths in the world has risen 20%.
Many marchers carried posters depicting the faces of the fallen. When the march got to Lafayette Park, there were some very specific demands for Obama, for Congress, and for the Supreme Court.
Change has always come from ordinary Americans who sit in or stand up or march to demand it. Mr. President, today we march. Today we stood up. And in the past week alone, all over this country, we sat in. There are things our government can do right now. President Obama, you can sign an executive order today banning federal contractors from discriminating based on gender identity and sexual orientation. It's only been sitting on your desk almost a year now. So, President Obama, get off your hands and get to work! Congress, you can pass any of the piecemeal legislation I just mentioned. Marriage, immigration reform, anti-bullying, etc. Congress, get off your hands and get to work! Our Supreme Court can rule in favor of equality after hearing the two marriage-related cases before them this spring. They can also take on new cases in other areas that deal with these issues. Supreme Court, get off your hands and get to work! So why aren't they?
At the closing ceremony, a few of the names of the over 1,000 people who have been killed by anti-gay hatred and bigotry, either murdered outright or driven to suicide, were read out in front of the White House.
Angie Zapata.
Angie.
Lawrence King.
Lawrence.
Mary Chapa and Molly Olgan.
Mary.
Molly. Mariah Molina Qualls.
Mariah.
Letitia Green.
Letitia.
And these folks, all of whom were either murdered or forced into suicide because of their sexuality, must never be forgotten. Bigotry and hatred against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender folks and other gender-variant folks must never be forgiven.